Get ready, it's time for the podcast.
Welcome back to the Candy Colored Studio. I'm artist Katrina Berg. This is episode 178. 11 of my favorite cookbooks, and also we'll do a couple red pills at the end, just because last week I didn't do a formal one, although I really feel like Adam and Eve are like the biggest red pill ever, and so I feel like that's always a good topic. Okay, so I don't know if you know how much I love cooking, and maybe you love cooking and baking as much as we do here, but I will say that with life so busy, I just don't spend as much time on it as I used to. So I feel like we're always trying to make quick things, and because of health things, we've tried different, you know, ways to, you know, different programs. We did keto for a while. We've been more or less vegan, vegetarian for the last couple of years. Anyways, we've tried all kinds of stuff to help with some of my issues with like Crohn's and other things. So anyways, so I'm going to share some of my favorite cookbooks, because despite it all, there are some things that have kind of like brought us through. And I love to create, obviously, with paint, but I also love to create with food. And my dad is the kind of person that he just goes into the fridge and he pulls out whatever's available, and he can just like make amazing things out of whatever is there. And then my mom is the person that loves to follow a recipe, and she's a really good cook, but she taught me how to follow a recipe. So there are times I've found that it's really good to know how to follow a recipe. And then other times I think it's really good to be able to just take whatever you have and make something. And so I definitely lean more towards my dad with wanting to just create with whatever I have on hand. But I do think it's helpful. Especially with baking, Anna Claire and I have learned that you really do need to have a really good recipe to continue to repeat the same thing over and over. So obviously with some things, it doesn't matter. It's very loosey-goosey with some recipes, but there are some things, like especially with baking, it needs to be very specific. So my all-time favorite cookbook is actually How to Be a Domestic Goddess. And if you are listening in podcast world, I am actually doing this episode, and it will be in YouTube. It'll also be on my podcast, a video format, katrinaberg.com. Click on podcast, and then you'll see the video for episode 178. So okay, I received this cookbook when I was engaged, and this, I think it was kind of like a bridal shower. Anyways, my dear friend Nancy Wishart, well, we just love the Wisharts. I grew up with Wisharts, just a little bit older than I, just a little bit younger, and they're all just amazing people. But Nancy, the mom, gave this book to me, and I was like, wow, what is this? And I started flipping through it, and I was immediately hooked. I'm like, oh my gosh, there's so many good things. Meanwhile, so it's by Nigella Lawson. And if you're not familiar with Nigella, you need to totally, next time you need like a favorite cook, like check her out, because she kind of rose to be like one of the first home cook stars, and she's British. And so of course, like not just the Brits and the UK love her, but all over the world, just because she's amazing. Okay, so let me just show you. I'm not going to show a ton of recipes in every book because I think it would take too long, but it's really hard not to share a bunch of Nigella's, because this book is kind of my Bible in a lot of ways. Like I just always like, I'm actually still subscribed. I get Nigella's emails pretty much every day. And that's pretty rare for me to stick around for that long. Okay, so I'll share with you some of these. I mean, look at how gorgeous this is. This is the autumnal. Anyways, it's an autumn birthday cake. And it's just as delicious as the picture shows. It's lovely. I mean, it's amazing. So we made this one year for Anna Claire's birthday, because she's born in October. But anyways, what makes it really fun is there's maple syrup in it. And then of course, they use egg wipes on the frosting, and it's got some pecans on the top. Anyways, it's a beautiful, beautiful, easy cake. So we love that one. I'll show you my favorites, but then I'll show you my kids' favorites. So for example, for a long time, the kids were always asking me to make fairy cakes. And here is a picture. Oh my gosh, this is so hard. Of the fairy cakes. And they are just as delightful as the photos. Like they're just super easy, light. And they're really, she just gives you a lot of really good examples of how to decorate them. And it's very easy for kids. And so those were our very favorites when our kids, when my big kids were little, especially Anna Claire. This is another favorite one of mine. Her savory crackers, and they are Irish blue crackers. And I actually went and bought the yummy blue cheese to make these crackers. But then I learned that you could use different types of cheeses that you had on hand, like Parmesan and whatever. You can use soft, you can also use hard cheeses, depending. I mean, obviously the softer is probably better for this recipe, but I've tried it with lots of different kinds. And I will say this is what also makes such a good cookbook, in my opinion, is that I can take these recipes and I can alter them depending on what ingredients I have on hand. If I don't want to run out and go to the store or if I'm just feeling really creative and adventurous and I want to try something new. But again, savory crackers. That's what she calls them. And they are not flat. They're pretty, you know, they can be fairly poofy. Anyways, they're really, really yummy. So we love those. I've just got a few more to show you. Let's see. Okay. So this is one of my very, very favorites. So she has a whole section in this book it's called chocolate. The whole section is called chocolate. So of course it's like my favorite chapter, but anyways, this is the dense chocolate loaf. Yeah. Dense chocolate loaf cake, super easy. Always delicious. She does a really good job with these chocolate stuff. Okay. And then, I would say are probably one of our very favorite recipes in this whole book. And it's probably the messiest pages are her molten chocolate baby cakes. I keep trying to think what other people call them, but the idea is it's a little bit crunchy on the outside, but then as soon as you stick your spoon in there, it's like a lava cake, right? And it's delicious and super easy. And I have adapted it for my various food needs. And then the last one I'm going to show you are Nigella's brownies. And it's interesting because I would say brownies are pretty typically American, but this is such a good recipe. And she said it came from her friend, Justine Bacardi. And a lot of these recipes that Nigella shares, they come from friends and family. And then of course she's kind of, you know, she shares or perfects them, but there we go. There's the brownies. And one year we used the brownies to make a birthday cake. And that was really fun too, because I remember that year, I think it was Garrett's birthday it was probably Karsten's, and he was really into Legos. So it made sense, but these brownies are always, always really easy, quick, and really good. And of course you have to use real chocolate when you cook with Nigella. So, okay. That's the first book. Let's see. I got to figure out where to put all these books when I'm done. Okay. Number two, this one is really special because this one was another wedding gift, and it's called The Happy Little Cookbook. And this is a shout out to my friend, my dear, dear friend, Cassie Dawes. And Cassie and I met in Las Vegas. She is a landscape architect, and she was I don't know how many years older, maybe just a few years older than our graduating class. And so she was already, she may have even been a partner in the firm when I first met her, but she also was really active with the students at UNLV in the architecture department. So she was really helpful with all the landscape architecture students. And anyway, she's just amazing. And I got to know her, and she is seriously one of the most generous people that I know, period. Just put that there. She's just incredible. So she gave us this gorgeous cookbook when we first got married, and I just love it. As you can tell, it's very loved. We have used it through the years. So we've been married 17 years now. This year will be 18 years. So this Happy Little Cookbook has gotten a lot of use. And I will say our all-time favorite recipe that we use all the time is her basic crepes. Again, you can see we've got all these scribbles over here because we've used it so much. And again, I have altered it depending on if I wanted to use fancy flowers or, you know, change up some things. And it's been really, really a good one. But yeah, basic crepes. And then she's got lots of other really good ones like pumpkin soup, Italian style asparagus. Anyways, lots of good ones. So big shout out to you, Cassie. You made my list of favorite cookbooks. We should probably, I bet that Cassie is totally, this is her 2002 edition. I would not be surprised if she has made an updated version. We should have her publish it because I just love Cassie. Okay. So there's Cassie's book. And then this next one is actually my go-to for everything. So I learned early in our marriage, I've always been a big fan of the America's Test Kitchen. Maybe you've seen a lot of their show and, other books that they've put out, but they have what's called the America's Test Kitchen Family Cookbook. And this is truly my go-to. And you can tell because first of all, look at the color change. It's like pink on the binding because it has seen so many days. And then also the binding is like really like frayed. Okay. So one of the things that I love about this book is that it comes in a folder. Okay. So anytime I want to take any of the recipes out, I just open up the rings and pull it out. And then there's obviously because it's America's Test Kitchen, they have really great things like in the very beginning of it, it says emergency substitution. So anytime you don't have exactly what is called for in the recipe, you can look for that. And if, as you've probably figured out, that tends to be me quite often. Like I don't always have everything. I've slowly learned there are certain things that I absolutely have to have in my pantry at all times, but it's always good to know that there's other options for things. So again, basically if there's something that I haven't cooked for a while or that I've never made, usually if it's something like well-known, I can find a decent, like a really great recipe here in the America's Test Kitchen. So one thing that I love about this book is that the more that I started cooking legumes or beans, I realized that they all need different soaking times and cooking times. And so one of the things that I love, they have sections throughout the book. And for example, this one says cooking beans 101, and it just has a picture of the beans. It tells you how much to cook, how much water you need, how long to cook it. So again, lots of great tools like that in here. And then each section is really basic. Like you've got your appetizer tab, a tab for salads, sandwiches, soups and stews, vegetables, rice, grains, and beans. Anyways, it goes on and on. And so it's really easy to work through the book. I can always find something super easy, and it's very, it's probably one of the most comprehensive cookbooks that I use all the time. And I have to say they have another edition. It's called Quick. So it's also the family cookbook, but they call it Quick because it probably has half as many ingredients and you can make all the recipes in there really, really fast. And so we've bought that one as well. And I have used it, but I will say that this one is still my favorite. Okay, so typical things that we eat all the time that I love to use out of this cookbook. The first one would be just basic spaghetti and meatballs. Like it's something that my kids, if I'm not around, they can pull out the recipe and do it themselves. And it's super, super easy and always tastes good. Another one that we got out of this that we do all the time is just learning how to make frittatas. We love frittatas and omelets. And so there's some basics about eggs and all those good things. Okay, what else? Also, our very favorite pizza dough recipe is based on the pizza dough recipe from this book. A lot of times I will use my sourdough, but I still go back to this recipe to make the dough. So kind of random there, but there you go. And then I love their basic biscuit recipe. And of course they have different variations that you can make buttermilk biscuits. You can change and add things to them. So again, such a good, just like if you need just a real basic cover your everything, like America's Test Kitchen. I love that one. Okay. So the next one would be, okay. So I actually I spent a summer in Southeast Asia when I was touring with the folk dance team from BYU. And we went to Indonesia, Vietnam, and Thailand that summer. And it was great. And so we came back and I always loved Asian food. My dad he served an LDS mission in Taiwan. And so we used to eat Chinese food all the time, whether my dad cooked it or we went out to eat. It was very common. And then I had a lot of friends I remember going to their houses and I could smell the curry and, you know, different yummy things, but we didn't necessarily cook that stuff at our house. My parents like to go eat those things now, but they didn't ever really do it when I was little. And I do think they cook more of it now, but again, I'm the oldest and I think they just weren't there yet. So when I got home that summer, I bought like three different Southeast Asia cookbooks and they're all good, but I'm just going to share one of them with you. This one is by James McNair. It's just called James McNair Cooks Southeast Asian. And I mean, it's a beautiful book for one, but I'll just read some of the recipes that are in there. The first one that I love is his mushroom coconut soup. And what I love about it, it's just a very Southeast Asian coconut soup recipe. And he keeps it really basic, but once you learn the basics, you can throw just about anything that you have in there and you kind of realize how many vegetables you want to add, how simple you want to keep the ingredients, but it's a really good one. And then the next one that I would show you, eggplant is probably my very favorite vegetable. I love eggplant. And this is a stuffed eggplant and it's really, really good. It has a tamarind dipping sauce, red chili sauce, shallots, all kinds of really, really yummy things that I just love. So I would share that one. And then he also has quite a few just like basics in the back, sauces and things that you want to add to your, you know, to your dishes. And so one of the ones that I use all the time is the peanut sauce and specifically Indonesian style. I mean, I like Thai, I like all these, but this Indonesian style one is really, really good. So it's a great book. Okay. The next one. So back in my blogging days, this cute gal, Brenda Stanley, reached out to me because I was sharing a lot of recipes. I used to share recipes probably once a week, at least once a week. I don't know. When my kids were little and I was navigating like food allergies and I was trying to figure out what they would eat, I did a lot of recipes on my blog. And so this cute gal reached out to me and said, I just wrote this book. It's called The Zucchini Houdini. And she's like, can I send you a copy? Will you write a review? Well, of course that meant we had to make a lot of these recipes and it is such a good book. Okay. The Zucchini Houdini. It's just a really small, it's not huge. It's paperback, simple, but when you get to the end of summer or even midsummer, you have so much zucchini or, you know, you're working through the holidays and you want to try something new. This particular book has so many great recipes. The zucchini tempura, we liked that a lot. Let's see what else. She doesn't have pictures, so I'm just going to read them off. The zucchini meatloaf was really good. And that was the first time that I think I put a lot of vegetables in the meatloaf. I even added a grated carrot and that was delicious. Zucchini garden casserole. That was great. I loved making casseroles when my kids were little. They probably don't even remember eating some of this stuff. The Ritzy zucchini, that one they loved. I didn't use Ritz. I mostly just used breadcrumbs, but I think my kids would love the Ritz. But back then I was really particular. I didn't let them have, what do you call those crackers that everyone eats? Ritz crackers. Yeah, we didn't buy those. Okay. Although we have bought similar things these days, now that everyone's a little older, I have kind of lightened up a little bit with some stuff, which is not always good. The zucchini pancakes. I used to make those a lot until they started figuring out that I was putting zucchini in there because they really didn't know for a long time. And then our all-time favorite recipe in this book is zucchini apple crisp. And again, it's so good. It tastes exactly like an apple crisp, but instead of using apples, it's pure zucchini, zucchini, butter, spice, some rolled oats. It's really, really good. And we would eat it all summer with ice cream and the kids were in absolute heaven. So what number is that so that we know where we're at? So that one's number five. Okay. Number six. So when our oldest kids were really little, our middle boy was probably just barely a year. And we started doing these sushi nights with some cousins and friends. And it was so much fun. And we would go to Salt Lake and go to sushi. And then eventually we were like, we just need to learn how to make our own sushi. So I think there were four families, couples really. And we decided, let's all get a sushi book and kind of learn, and then we'll come together and we'll make sushi. And so we did that, like, I don't know, once a month. We did that for a while and it was so fun. And one of those nights we had all the kids there and it was a blast. The kids had a good time. I could not get any sushi because our middle boy Garrett was like downing it like it was candy. Anyways, this is the book that I bought to help us kind of figure out how to make our own sushi. And it's a DK Sushi Taste and Technique by Kimiko Barber and Hiroki Takamura. There you go. Okay. Things that I love about this book. First of all, they're really good about teaching the basics. Like, I had no idea that you really should buy a specific kind of rice for sushi. And we learned that really quick. And then we also learned from this book exactly how to prepare the sushi rice. And so that was super helpful. So they have a whole section called Ingredients and Pantry Essentials, and you can learn all about the basics. And so that was really helpful. They did have a section. Here's the section on preparing the sushi rice. So there's that. And then they have a section for kids. They call it children's sushi. We made them a couple times. And what's ironic, the kids thought they looked good, but they liked the sushi we were eating better. So we just stopped making the kids sushi and we just made regular sushi. Whatever we were eating, they would eat. So we learned how to make all different kinds. We learned how to hand roll our own. We learned how to, rolled sushi and then hand rolled. Was that what they call it? Where you just, hand formed. Anyways, so we learned how to do all kinds of stuff and it was so much fun. And we haven't done it for a while, but I would say if you want to learn how to do sushi, this is a great book. I'll have to ask the girls what other books they did, because again, we had some really great books between our group. Okay, this is another good book that I've had forever. It's called Nourishing Traditions and it's by Sally Fallon. And it's kind of this is one of those books that's been around for a long time. And the whole idea is to basically take all the nourishing traditions that have happened around the world that have kept people healthy and just have their vitals running smoothly. And they put it all into this book. So when Karsten was a toddler, I don't even think I was pregnant with Anna Claire. I may have been pregnant with Anna Claire, but I hadn't had her yet. And my dear friend Leslie Smoot, we had a cooking group for a while and she told me about this book. And so that's kind of how I started learning. But what was great was I learned about like basic things like oatmeal and how most of the world actually calls it porridge. And I learned about the nourishing things with porridge. I learned about how to make my own mayonnaise and sauces and fermented stuff. We even tried making our own kimchi. My brother, who spent 2 years in a Korean mission, said that it wasn't really like the stuff he ate. So we kind of gave up on that. I have been buying it ever since. But there's some good stuff in there. There's how to make different kinds of sauerkraut. My very first time that I made a sourdough starter was because of this book. So we started baking with really, really traditional sourdough starters. And then also, let's see what else. Yeah. So there's some really good stuff. So there's different things that you've never heard of, but then there's also just basic stuff, learning kind of the origins and then how to make it as healthy as possible. But then there's all kinds of stuff about beans and legumes and vegetables and stews and soups and really good stuff. So now again, you can tell my cookbook collection is like all over the board, right? It's very vast for sure. Okay. This next book, speaking of making our own sourdough starter, it's called The Art of Baking with Natural Yeast. And it's by Caleb Warnock and Melissa Richardson. And this book really got our family just made it so much more comfortable. Melissa did a really good job of just having basic recipes that you can follow to basically, we can make our own boules and baguettes And they all came from this fabulous book. I'll show you some pictures. So I love her garlic rosemary sourdough boule. Like that one we used to make all the time. And once you make the dough, you can shape it any way you want. So we still make rolls and baguettes. Here's another gorgeous picture. But yeah, once I kind of learned and felt comfortable, then I was able to buy a couple other sourdough bread books. And so that's kind of, this is kind of where it all started. She teaches you just how to do the baguettes, how to make them look good. Gosh, this is hard. I know I'm having such a hard time with the camera. Anyways, that's kind of where it started. And then we started even making waffles and pancakes with the sourdough. The kids decided they like Kodiak cakes the best. And so that's been, so they called those daddy pancakes because Carl would make them in a pinch, but mommy pancakes were always the sourdough, the natural yeast pancakes. And this is where I first learned about the dough hook. It was either in here or the food nanny. I'm not totally sure. I think I already knew what it was. Anyways, I've had this for a long time and it's super, super helpful. Okay. All right. This is number 9 and it is called Small Victories and it's by Julia Tertian. And what I love about this book is she just has lots of ways to just make cooking easy. Okay. Let me start with one of these things she had in the beginning. So that one of the things that I love is that she has a whole section in all of her recipes called spinoffs. So she gives you a recipe then, but then she teaches you how to make it other ways. And of course, that's something that I'm always looking for. So that was something that really appealed to me. I didn't realize I was getting that, but it was like such a bonus, right? Okay, so let me show you this picture right here. So she calls these devilish eggs because instead of taking all the time to take out the hard-boiled yolk and mix it with your mayonnaise and your spices or whatever, she basically just leaves the yolk, she cuts the hard-boiled egg in half, and then she puts the toppings on top, which I think is brilliant. And that way I can make deviled eggs so much faster. I love deviled eggs and I could always make them faster. And so I could make all kinds of different spices and sauce combinations, and it was super easy. So I love the devilish eggs recipe. This is another really good one because I love eggplant so much, but smoky eggplant dip with yogurt and za'atar. And I love za'atar. So two favorite things right there, eggplant and za'atar. And then I'll share just one more in here. Okay, so here's another spinoff on meatballs that I love. It's her turkey and ricotta meatballs. And I think from this, I really realized that meatballs, meatloaf, it really can be just anything that you have on hand. And, you know, for me, I'm like, oh, I need to utilize this a lot more. So another really good one, Small Victories, such a good book. I can tell we're getting close to the end here. I'm killing my stack over here. Okay, this one I love. It's called Love and Lemons. I think I first started, I think I was following their blog and then getting their email updates with recipes like probably once a week. And then they came out with their first cookbook. This, I believe this is the first one. Let me see what year it is. This one is from 2016. And what I love about this cookbook is that the chapters are actually based on the ingredients. So if you look, first chapter is apples, then artichokes, asparagus, avocados, berries. So obviously it is alphabetized plus it's mostly vegetables because she loves vegetables. So it's mostly vegetables. So you can say, oh, I have a whole bunch of cauliflower. So I'll just go to that chapter and see if anything looks really good. The other thing that I love about this book, by the way, it's by Janine Donofrio and then Jack Matthews does the photography. What I love is that she reminds us that first you kind of start with, she has this whole section. It's called How to Cook with What You Have, My Basic Guide for Impromptu Cooking. And this is me to a T. Sometimes I'll have like a couple recipes that I want to do during the week, but then I kind of just like let things happen. But she says, number one, start with your vegetables. Then you choose a meal format. So it could be tortillas. It could be, am I going to make this into a pasta or a taco night? Or maybe I'll just do soup. And so you kind of think about these things, you look and see what you have. And then her other things that she talks about, she says, it's really important to sauce it up. And I could not agree more. Sauces are like my key to making things taste good. And then of course, spices, that's her number five. Anyways, lots of good stuff. And then she even has a good way to just use leftovers, which I love to do as well. I love to have kind of like a stir fry and then the next day make it into a taco or throw it on top of a pizza. I love doing that kind of stuff with leftovers. So I'll just tell you some of the ones that I love in her book here. This is the chickpea salad sandwich with crunchy red cabbage. We have been so into red cabbage lately and chickpeas. So that's a good one. And roasted cauliflower and pear pizza. Again, I love pizza, but I love to like switch it up. And I'm such a big fan of arugula, anything with arugula. And then of course, cauliflower and pear. What a great combination, right? Okay, here's another one. Sorry, I'm having trouble moving these pages for you. Okay, here we go. Eggplant, of course. Eggplant and mushroom meatballs. We're seeing a theme here. Meatballs and eggplant. I love it. So yeah, again, any way to make meatballs and some of these things that are so basic, just to like spice it up so that it's different when we have it. Okay. I don't even think I marked it in the next book, but anyways, I'll tell you when we get there. Okay. So this last one that I'm going to share are her Swiss chard and white bean tacos. Again, anything that you have left over can really just be made into a taco so easily. And I love that. So such a good one. Love and Lemons. Okay. This is the last cookbook that I'm going to show you. And this is actually by my dear friend, Tara Teaspoon or Tara Bench. And we lived together our freshman year at BYU. She's amazing. You guys, I did a whole episode with her when this cookbook came out. It's been a year, just over a year, and she's working on her second cookbook. So definitely, if you haven't seen it, go back and listen to that episode. I'll put the link to it in the show notes. And again, this is a great cookbook. And I've been following Tara on Instagram for the last few years, but I also get her emails, and she has a really good email list. I can't remember if it's weekly or biweekly, but at least weekly I get emails from her. Okay. Of course, some of these I shared in the original episode, but I'm trying not to share the same ones, but I love this recipe so much. So it is just a basic Parmesan and herb white bean dip. So it's kind of like hummus, but with white beans. And I have been able to kind of change this one up a little bit, which I love because it totally changes the flavor depending on the beans or depending on the spices that you add or the fresh herbs. It really makes a difference. So I love that one. Another one that I love that she has in here is her tomato and Roquefort steak flatbread. Again, flatbread, we tend to make our pizzas more like flatbread. Like we'll make a pizza for the kids or the littler kids, and then we will make more of a vegan or vegetarian. It's more flatbread style. And so I love this. And again, it has arugula, one of my favorite things. And of course it's got cheese, tomatoes, and nuts. And I think anytime you combine those, it's just wonderful. So that is such a good one. Here's another one, veggie and black bean tostadas. So again, I think that what I love about these last two, well, really the last three cookbooks, is that you can take the things that you have in your kitchen and just make these delicious, really tantalizing meals in not a whole lot of prep or a lot of time. And that's what I think is so great about that one. So there's that. Let's pull out another one here. Okay. Okay, this is such a cute picture of Tara. So this is Tara with her whole wheat pancakes and her special syrup. Let me tell you what the syrup is. It's like a vanilla. Here, I'll just read it. It is vanilla bean buttermilk syrup. So amazing. And I, once we started making homemade syrups, like it was like night and day. I cannot make it as often as my kids like to use it. The twins, especially, they love to have French toast like every morning. So, but it is so good. Okay. So there's that one. And then we kind of get into the sweet section. She's so good at so many things. But we do love her sweets. Okay. Let me show you. Here is one that I'm actually dying to try, that I'm going to have to give you a full review on. We've tried most of these, but the almond flour sugar cookie bars looks divine. And then I'll show you some ones that we absolutely love. So this is the decadent chocolate peanut butter whoopie pies. So good. And then we've got two more. Again, everything in here is absolutely gorgeous. This one is like a, you can't go wrong. Tara, in my original interview with her, she talks about how these soft ginger snaps with sweet orange cream cheese, they would eat them like, I think it was even like 4th of July. She says, my mom made my aunt's recipe often, but she talks about how like some of these recipes that we think are just purely for a holiday season, that they would pull them out. Like they were just a family tradition. And so they'd have them in the middle of summer, and everything citrus in the summer always tastes fresh. And to get a little bit of a zing, that ginger zing, I think is really good, but we love these cookies so much. These are some of our very favorite cookies ever right now. And then the last one that we have tried that we absolutely loved were the coconut lime cookies. They're absolutely delicious. But again, everything in here is amazing. I'm so excited for Tara's second cookbook. That's going to be exciting. Okay, so let's finish off. I am curious about what your favorite cookbooks are. So you'll have to email me or leave me some comments. Tell me what your favorite cookbooks are. But yeah, I think that sometimes we just need different ideas to get us out of, I don't know if I'd say it's a rut or just, you know, just doing the same old thing. Cross training for eaters. I don't know. That's just kind of how I feel about it. But I like to try new things every once in a while, just to spice up things in the kitchen. So if it means buying a new cookbook or finding a new recipe online, that's definitely helpful for me. Okay, so let's talk about a couple quick red pills. Something that I saw this week that you can look up for yourself. I've been seeing it the last couple of days. So right now I'm recording this on Tuesday. So I started seeing this, I believe, Monday. Today is the 25th. Okay. So there are truckers. We have seen truckers do amazing things this past year in Australia, in various parts of our country, even in England. I mean, there were lots of different things that I was seeing. But if you haven't notice this, I would say go and check it out because it's really fascinating. Ask yourself, why are 50,000 truckers in Canada all converging together? What is this mass protest for? What is it they're trying to do? And it was so beautiful. I watched some videos and there were the huge truck convoys. I want to say they're going to Ottawa, or is that right? Anyways, the point is there were hundreds of people when they would go under these highway overpasses, there were hundreds of people up on the bridge, just waving and cheering with their signs and flags and just so like supportive of these truckers. And I thought, oh, that's so awesome. So, I mean, ask yourself, what is it? What are they doing? Why are they doing this? These are things that you can look up when you're looking this up. And then I kept thinking about the truckers. And what I love about them is that I think we all feel like there's moments in our life where we feel like, how can I make a small difference? I'm just one person. I'm just one little person. How can I make a difference? How can I help others? How can I lift my community, my neighbors, my friends, my country, the world, my human family? How can I make a difference when I'm just one person? And what I think is so amazing about the truckers is that they, you know, goodness gracious, they have the capacity to really impact our supply chain, right? And so if they really want something to happen, they're the ones to do it, right? So 50,000 truckers in Canada right now, and there are over 650 truckers in, like, I want to say North Carolina. They are headed up to Canada right now, which is fascinating. And then there's other things that I've noticed. I guess, again, you can look this up for yourself. And I would say, if you can't find what you want on Google, I tend to have better luck with DuckDuckGo using the Brave browser. Okay. That's what I like. I can find a lot more stuff on there. But again, I did hear and see some information that possibly we are stopping Canadians from coming into our country, and even Mexicans from coming in from the South, truckers. There was stuff happening there. So you could look that up as well. But again, it is an exciting time. My hats go off to these truckers. Like, they're so brave, so brave. Okay. So I would say that. And then a couple of weeks ago, I mentioned this idea of the mass form psychosis. Okay. And I suggested or invited you to look it up. So I'm just going to say a few things about it. The word mass formation psychosis is kind of like this composition of a couple different things that Michael Yeadon and Matthias Desmond were talking about. Okay. So basically, they were talking about how Carl Jung stated that the greatest threat to civilization lies not with the forces of nature, nor with any physical disease, but with our inability to deal with the forces of our own psyche. Okay, that's amazing. Carl Jung, he's amazing, obviously. He said, indeed, it is becoming ever more obvious that it is not famine, not earthquakes, not microbes, not cancer, but man himself who is man's greatest danger to man, for the simple reason that there is no adequate protection against psychic epidemics, which are infinitely more devastating than the worst of natural catastrophes. So just yesterday, a little twin said, or a big twin asked me to show him the video of the laughter is more contagious than COVID video. And so I found it and we were watching it. I was watching it with little twin and he's like, why is everyone laughing? And I'm like, because it's contagious. You watch someone with such a good laugh, it's contagious. You can't stop laughing. Even if you don't know that person, most of us have felt it with friends and family. Someone starts laughing and we just, you know, everyone starts laughing. But when a complete stranger has a really good laugh and won't stop, like, you just can't help it. It's totally contagious. Okay. Last thing that I want to say about the mass formation psychosis. Again, this is something that I just invite you to check out and research and ask yourself the hard questions. But this is something that I heard David Icke say this week on, I can't remember, but he did have an episode with Brian Rose, but I'm not sure if that's what that was from. Anyways, he said, if you're not controversial in a world that's utterly insane, then it's time to find a mirror and ask why. So again, I know it's good to be a peacemaker. I know it's good to be, to go with the flow and not ruffle any feathers. But there comes a point where something deep inside says, this doesn't feel right. Something isn't right. I don't like this, the way this feels. I don't like that I'm feeling pressured to do X, Y, or Z. So again, that's the time we have to ask ourselves, okay, I need to look in the mirror. I need to find out why do I feel this way? Why am I being triggered? Okay. And then David Icke goes on to talk about this idea. His latest book is called A Renegade Mind. He says, a renegade mind will always question and will never hand over their self-respect. I thought that was really great. There is a point where, you know, it is important to love our neighbors, but if we are loving our neighbors to the point where we are setting ourselves on fire to keep them warm, there's a problem, right? That was something that I heard a long time ago that I thought was really interesting. Another one that I heard this morning that was hilarious. This guy said, "Oh, you're going out? Well, make sure you wear your coat." And the person said, "Well, why? Why should I wear my coat? It's not that cold." He's like, "Well, if you don't wear your coat, then I'm going to be cold." So again, if you're not controversial in a world that's utterly insane, then it's time to find a mirror and ask why. And these are hard questions. But if we don't ask ourselves these questions, are we just part of this mass formation psychosis? Are we just moving along with everyone else? And I think, again, we can love each other without giving up our self-respect, right? Things to think about. All right. Sending a lot of love from the Candy Colored Studio. I hope you find something yummy to cook today in your kitchen. And I just want you to know that you're loved. And sending lots of love. Goodbye.